When you were a kid, what weren't you allowed to do on a Sunday? Now, if you were from a church-going family, or in some cases, even if you weren't, Sunday was a day of restrictions. You weren't allowed to watch TV or go out and play. You weren't allowed to wear your normal clothes, but had to put on your Sunday best, which you were under no circumstances to get dirty. No climbing trees, no power slides on a waxed wooden floor. You parents will be grateful in a few years when we haven't re-waxed this floor, because there's much more friction. It's harder. You can't get quite as much of a slide on as you used to be able to. Not that you're allowed to. You weren't allowed, were you, to see your friends. You couldn't go to the park. No games. No fun. Perhaps you weren't allowed to be too happy either. Levity of any kind would at the very least have been frowned upon, if not outright banned. It's like the whole day had a sign over the door saying, "Abandon laughter, all ye who enter here." For some of us, Sunday was the worst day of the week by far. After having been made to sit through a long, or it certainly seemed very long, church service that you didn't understand, which you didn't feel was meant for you, in those uncomfortable clothes you were terrified of getting stained, you had to go home and sit in near silence, doing nothing except perhaps an improving book or a hand-permitted activity. So you could dice games, obviously, but perhaps a jigsaw puzzle wasn't too worldly an activity as long as you sat there in silence and did it. Now, for most of us, those days, that culture is of the past. But even today, many struggle to know what is right to do on a Sunday. How should we be spending our time between the morning meeting and the evening meeting? Christians really allowed to do on a Sunday if it's our Sabbath? We can very quickly, a desire to do the right thing, turn it into a day of over-pious restrictions which is devoid of joy and life as the most superstitious family of yesteryear. If we're to look for answers as to what attitude we should have towards the Sabbath, we need to go, as we've just done, to the start of our Bibles. We need to remember the context for the Israelites, and we need to think about the pattern which God has laid down for us. Pattern is actually the first of three key words we're going to look at this morning. What God is doing here is laying down a creation pattern, a design to be imitated and kept. And this is throughout the first few chapters of Genesis. In these chapters, he shows us the way the world is supposed to be. We've already seen his pattern for the cosmos, the heavens and the earth, the amazing order and organization with which he created the sea, the stars, the land, the planets, the way he created the plants and the animals, as we saw in our reading, each after their own kind, in their own proper realm and sphere. Here, God is laying down a pattern for the way people are supposed to live. Now, don't forget the context here. Context is king. Now, we don't know the exact timing for when Moses is writing all this. Some point between Sinai and his death just outside of the promised land. But that means that whatever the time within two points, the ancient Israelite audience reading, or more likely hearing these words, already know about the Sabbath. It's already a day that they keep. They've been given the Ten Commandments. They've already been given the law. They know that the seventh day, Saturday for them is to be a Sabbath. That literally means a day of rest. The word Sabbath doesn't actually appear in our account as a noun, but it appears as a verb, rested. So it's the same word, resting. Now the Israelites have precise stipulations, think to Exodus or Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They have precise laws limiting what they should do on this day, Saturday. They're not to work. They're not to prepare food. They're not to engage in all the business they do Sunday to Friday. You'll remember when the manna came down, no manna came down on a Saturday. They got double on the Friday, so they didn't have to go out and gather the food. They had enough. Now, they've probably already had, when they read these words, the incident where a man was put to death for gathering firewood on a Sabbath. They already know all about Sabbath. And here, Moses tells this people that after God had, in 6 days, finished the work of creation that he was making, on the seventh day, he put down his tools to enjoy what he'd made. Now, there's so much that we could say about this. We'll probably have time after the meeting to talk about some of the things there isn't space for here, although I'm going to try and cover some of it. This does not teach, in chapter 2 of Genesis, that God ceased his activity after he'd created the world. He didn't set the world in motion and then leave it to spin, like a watch he'd made, wound up, and then left to tick. That's called deism, or deism. It was a very popular philosophy in the 18th century, this idea that God kind of started everything and then just left it to work on its own. The Bible doesn't teach that. It wasn't something the ancient Israelites would have even thought of, let alone believed. Because like the ancient peoples around them, a god was only of interest to you, only worth worshipping, if they had an ongoing work. Now, in many ancient religions, the gods who'd made the world were not worshipped. Or they weren't worshipped as the chief of gods. Because there was no ongoing work that they did that you needed to worship them for. Like the world was already created, you didn't need to keep worshipping them to make sure it stayed created. You would worship the gods who made the world turn. You worshipped the ones who made the crops grow. You'd worship the ones who allowed women to conceive and have babies. All those who sort of had a work that you needed to worship them in order to get them to continue it on your behalf. So the Israelites know, because of that context, that when God rested and ceased from creating work, it didn't mean he stopped all his sustaining activity. Without God's active involvement, molecules would not hold together. The earth would not spin. No life or reality would be possible. So God's rest on the seventh day is not the of activity, but it's the completion of his creative start of the active enjoyment of all these good, very good things that he's made. But we're talking about the pattern being set here. I think to what I said just a moment ago about the Sabbath restrictions the Israelites had been given. Think of all the ways the law of God enforced rest. This isn't some cruelty inflicted on them. It's something God himself did, which they are, as those, as we've read in the end of chapter 1, made in his image, they are to do in imitation of him. But think also of the nature of the pattern. One day in seven, let's get the right number of fingers here, Israel is to rest from their labour. They are literally, to put down their tools, and instead of worrying about the practicalities of life, they're to rest and enjoy God. Now, maybe you're thinking back to the childhood I made you relive at the start of this message, reflecting on all the ways it wasn't an enjoyable day at all. But can you imagine what it must have been like for an ancient Israelite to hear this? Try putting yourself in their shoes once again. For generations, you, your ancestors, have been slaves. Forced bricks without straw, subject to endless unfairness. You didn't get a weekend. Now, you remember when the Exodus happened, Moses, it's not really a pretext, but Moses said, the people of God need to come out so they can go and worship God. So they weren't even allowed holy days. They didn't get days. You didn't get a day off ever. You worked 7 days, and then you worked the next 7 days, and the next, without rest. After a while, we know, don't we? Any repeated behaviour becomes habit, whether it's something you choose to do or something you are made to do. Now, those of you who have to get up early for work know how hard it is to actually have a lie-in on your day off. Whether you set the alarm or not, you wake up at the same time every day. The Israelites simply had no idea of what it was like just to take a day to rest. Rather than just try to bully or cajole them into it with strict punishments for breaking his law, God shows them a pattern that the Sabbath they are to keep is one which he too keeps. A day where you don't have to work. A day where you can rest and enjoy the work of the Almighty God. Well, that's the pattern God gives for the Sabbath. One day in every 7 days is to be a rest day. That's a good pattern. It's one that no other system, people have tried 5 day weeks, 7 day weeks. It just doesn't work. It doesn't fit with how we are as people. But our next key word is partition, which is maybe not the best word, but it fits. We've all got P words today. Partition. Because we see in verse 3 that this creation pattern God has laid down isn't just an arbitrary division or the most rational work-rest balance for average human biology. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So partition. God sets apart and blesses the seventh day. Now, think of those ancient Israelites struggling to get their head around why they now have 1 day of the week off from work. They are slaves. They've been institutionalized. That's become their identity. They don't know what they should do if they don't work. Like that man picking up sticks. He just couldn't trust that God would provide for them one day. It's like, well, I have to work. Some of us are like that ourselves, aren't we? We're always looking for something to do. Mail to send, something to mend or move or tidy. And worrying about all the work that will pile up if you take just 1 day, 1 moment off. You don't know how to stop. You need to learn, just like the Israelites. Sabbath wasn't just a day off. It wasn't just a day to go to the park and watch the local football team. It wasn't just a day to sit at home with your feet up, reading the paper. It was a special day, a day apart, a separate day, a holy day. Did you notice when we were reading this passage before? This is the first time anything in the Bible is called holy. The Sabbath is the first thing in the Torah, the first thing in the scriptures, in the Bible, that God sets apart and sanctifies. We've got the pattern. I mean, most of us, I think, keep, you know, a weekend fairly well. We rest a bit, even if it's not as much as we should. But what about this partition, this separateness? Have we ever really stopped and thought through what it might mean to keep one day in seven holy to the Lord? It's that God bless, viewed it with goodness and the opportunity for blessing, like we had in our other reading. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. I wonder if so often the reason it becomes a miserable day is because we're not truly keeping it holy. We're not using it to make the most of our relationship with God. We see it as something that we have to do, not something we get to do. We use it to enjoy the privileges of being a member of God's chosen people. But we rather see it as a day to tick off the most basic requirements of religion, so get on with our lives the rest of the week. I remember when I was a kid, I didn't really enjoy going to church. But if I didn't do it, I kind of felt dirty. So I would go along every few weeks when I felt guilty enough to do so. And then I'd feel a little bit better. I wouldn't enjoy it, but I was like, well, that'll keep me going for another few weeks. Now, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your time on a Sunday. I'm not going to list what you should and shouldn't do. But the basic principle which you need to pursue is, are you seeking to enjoy the blessing of God on the Sabbath by striving in everything you do to keep it holy? Set apart for the worship and enjoyment of the living God. Set apart so that you can be blessed on this blessed day. Now that's something that each of us needs to stop and rest and think through for ourselves. But if you're listening carefully, you've probably noticed that I've already started to confuse Saturday Sabbath, the Jewish Sabbath, and Sunday Sabbath, the Christian Sabbath. Now, there are some Christians, good Christians in many cases, who say they a Sabbath. So, you know, if anyone disagrees with me on this, we can talk about that as friends later on. They say that Christians don't need to keep the Sabbath because we're no longer under the law. Now, there's a good point in there, but I would point out that this predates the law. This is a creation pattern, not just a law. Before the law was given, God set apart one day in seven. But on the other hand, so that's one group of Christians, don't think there is a Sabbath, we don't need a Sabbath, we're free from the Sabbath. And there are some Christians and some cults, sort of or people dressed in Christian clothes who aren't Christians, who say that Christians should keep the Sabbath, but they should keep it on a Saturday, just like the Jews did, not on a Sunday, in accordance with the law. There's a hymn in our supplement, I think, written by a Seventh-day Baptist. So he was a Baptist who believed that Sabbath for Christians should be kept on a Saturday. So our third key word here is presence. So we've got pattern, partition, and presence. Now this should help us clear up some of this confusion and see just why it seems so clear that Sunday should be a Sabbath. I have become a Sunday Sabbatarian, someone who believes that Christians should keep the Sabbath on a Sunday by reading this book, the book of Genesis, and by reading the New Testament. By reading them together, we're able to piece together exactly what is happening in these two verses today. Now, in some ways, the seventh day strikes us as a very odd kind of thing. You look at this creation account, and God doesn't make anything. What purpose does it serve other than to give the Israelites a reason for taking one day of the week off? Like, well, it's okay to take one day of the week off because God did. That's a good pattern. Let's copy it. End of the story. Why are these verses such an essential part of the creation account? Describe a day where God doesn't do any creating. When you start piecing together different bits of scripture, the picture becomes clear. I would say overwhelmingly clear. All throughout chapter 1 of Genesis, I've stressed how anthropocentric that was, how man-centered. It's man-directed, man-focused. Creation is made for man to live in. And that it's good when it's good for man. They come on the sixth day as the climax of creation. And yet, they're not the climax of the account. The climax of what is made, but not the climax of the story of what is made. That comes, as we've seen, on day 7, when nothing much seems to happen, when verse 1 of chapter 2 tells us that the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. So listen to me when I tell you that the seventh day is what all of creation is about. This day is what the whole of creation, including the creation of man, builds up to. We read here in verse 3 that on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. And that resting is the reason the day is made holy. Almost like he rests and it has such an impact, it spills over and sanctifies this day. Now jokes have been made throughout history about why God needed to rest. I think if you've just created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, you would be pretty tired, wouldn't you? But the Lord God is the everlasting God. He never gets weary, not even when he's created everything that there is. He didn't break a sweat. He's resting not because of fatigue. He's not sitting down in a chair and with a sigh and putting his feet up. Only, in a sense, he is. God declares in the prophecy of Isaiah, "Heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you will build for me? Where will my resting place be?" The earth is God's footstool. Now let's ask a question. What for Israel was the symbolic footstool of God? A bit of basic Bible trivia here. What was the footstool of God? You can respond if you want. Anyone know? It was the ark. The ark of the covenant was the footstool. That's the significance of it. And where was the Ark of the Covenant to be kept? Where was it, to use the Bible's precise language, to rest? I couldn't hear that. In the Holy of Holies, in the temple. In the tabernacle, which was a precursor of the temple. Now, in most ancient temples in the Near East, including the tabernacle, the temple at Jerusalem, there was symbolism in the decoration that made it clear that each temple was a representation of the heavens and the earth. In the outer court, you would have a giant sea, called the Brass Sea. In the temple in Jerusalem, it was on 12 bulls, and it was far too big, far too high up to be used for washing. It was symbolic of the sea. In the inner courtyard, or in the first room in the temple, pictures of stars and the sun and the moon, as if that was the sky. And then in the Holy of Holies, that was where the footstool was, where the dwelling place of God was, as if that was the heavens the heavens. The whole heavens and the earth represented architecturally. Now, this was something that the Israelites would have been familiar with from their time in Egypt. Egyptian temples were built in a similar way. So it's clear to them what is happening on the seventh day than it is to us all these thousands of years later. On the seventh day, God is taking up residence in the temple he has built. That is what is happening in these few verses. That's what it means when it says that he rests. He's taking up occupancy in the cosmic temple, the heaven and the earth that he has finished creating. He's demonstrating his presence to the priesthood he's placed in it, mankind, male and female. And we'll think about it more in a few weeks, but for now, think about the fact that God created the heavens and the earth to give him glory, like we read in Psalm 19. And he created mankind, male and female, to be a race of priests to serve him in it. It becomes very, very clear when we come further on in chapter 2. The Sabbath, then, is holy because it's the day when God made his home in the temple he had built. When God turns up, puts his feet up on that footstool that is the whole of the earth, it becomes holy. Why then do Christian Sabbatarians keep Sabbath on a Sunday, which is the first day of the week and not the seventh? Now, doesn't that, whatever might have happened in the New Testament, doesn't that the law? Doesn't it break the pattern that we have in these verses? Well, no, because Christians, like the Jews, keep Sabbath on the day that God took up residence in his temple. We meet on the day when Jesus rose from the dead. We meet on the day the temple of his body was rebuilt in glory. And we have so much more to thank God for than the Israelites could ever have conceived of. Now, Sabbath itself is a sign pointing us forward to the eternal and permanent rest Christians enjoy in Christ. Now, did you notice how the seventh day is set apart in the very text of the Bible? Because unlike each other day, there's no evening and morning mentioned. There's no evening and morning, the seventh day, like it says, evening and morning, the first day, evening and morning, the second day, all the way through the creation week. You don't find that on the seventh day. The seventh day doesn't come to an end because the Sabbath was not meant to come to an end. It was meant to continue. The fall in chapter 3 seems to interrupt this pattern. But it's all pointing us forward to what we can enjoy when we belong to the new and final temple, a holy city which, as Revelation tells us, descends from heaven. Sunday is our Sabbath. It's a day from the work of the week. Even when we've so much to do, we can admit that life is busy. That laying aside a whole day is a sacrifice. It's not always easy. It's a day to acknowledge and enjoy the holiness of our God. A blessed day which ought to us. It should be the best day of the week. A day that reminds us of who and what we are, why we exist, and that equips us to serve and work for the next 6 days. We've been given a day where we can meet with God in the temple he has built, where we can reflect on everything we have in Jesus. One day in seven, according to the pattern, we can rest and look forward to the day when that rest will find its perfect fulfillment. Our Sabbath rest is a foretaste of the eternal, active rest we will enjoy in the new creation because of the work, not of us, but of Christ.